Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 199. Next week is our big 200th episode.
This is one where Magneto goes on trial.
Yes, it is one where Magneto goes on trial.
Wait, that's X-Men 200.
You're right.
This is where Dave goes on trial.
That'd be cool.
So, we do not have, like, a big special episode planned, but...
Well, we talked about some things we're going to do.
Yep.
We just have to do those.
Yes. But there is a big new theme song that will be coming.
Yes.
Our theme music has been done. We've had three iterations so far, done by Jarek Stewart, his longtime customer.
And a talented rocker.
Yes.
He,
He has made a lot of instrumental songs for us. You just heard one of them.
Yep.
That's a third version. Well, the fourth version will be coming next week. And I don't want to say too much about it, but Dave and I did do some vocals for it. And if you wanted to go prepare for what you're going to see or what you're going to hear next week, you might go look up G.I. Joe movie theme song on YouTube.
Talking about 1985... Not the current G.I. Joe
movie, the animated movie. Yep.
Yes. Just let your mind...
Just give it a look.
Yeah.
Give it a look.
It's going to be one of the stranger things since our promotion with Here I Go Again and a guy writhing around on a car hood.
Yeah, which you can also find on YouTube.
Yeah, and you should.
Did it really come out in 1985? I thought it was later than that.
I don't know.
It was 85 or 86.
Yeah, it's in that... Yeah. All right. Our inventory still continues. It is at 55% plus 2 to 12%, so you get 57 to 67% off.
Yeah.
And if you're a Rogue Card member, you get 67% off. Just show your card. And, yeah, there's still some good stuff on there. Like
absolutely.
All the posters.
Yep. One of my favorite Fantasy Comics, Thieves and Kings, is on there. All the posters. Games Workshop codices from the previous iteration.
Still some good games.
Which is just super fun reading,
yep.
You know. Some good graphic novels in the mix. Occasionally it's volume 3 of Invincible Iron Man or whatever, but that doesn't mean it's not good.
Yep. also, not this coming Monday, but the next Monday, March 5th, we will be closed that day so that we can do our inventory.
Right, and meditate, right?
And meditate.
Yes.
Does meditate mean cry?
Yes.
Then yes.
We will meditate on what we will be doing in the coming year.
Yes.
AKA cry about what's going to be we're going to be doing in the coming year.
Well, it's the first time doing inventory in the big giant new space.
So. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Interesting is a word.
Well, you know what? I will say this. It's going to be roomier than it was. It won't feel like we're all, like, crammed in there. It'll feel like we can roam around and have to... It'd be feel like we're going to be doing the inventory on the warehouse where they hide the Ark at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I don't think it's going to be quite that big.
But we're going to have Top Man on it, though.
Yes, we will have Top Man on it. all right. So we got a little bit of news this week. Not a lot, but the news we have is kind of big. First of all, we got the teaser or the trailer for Incredibles 2, finally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I thought it was fun. I know some criticisms of it. But I like seeing those characters again after so long, and I like that they're picking up pretty much.
Other than my own weird criticisms, what are people saying that are criticisms?
I don't think what my criticism of it is. My worry is that it looks too much of the same. Like it looks like instead of Mr. Incredible, it's Mrs. Incredible goes off to save the world. He stays home. He's the family man. And the promise of the Incredibles at the end was we're going to see a family of superheroes, and I kind of wanted to see that. And it looks like instead they're going to keep the balance between being real people and being superheroes, which I get it and makes sense, but I'm a little disappointed.
I don't know that I had any particular expectations about it, honestly. I haven't really considered over the years what it might be like, and the closest I've ever thought about expanding on it was probably, Randy, I believe you and I both enjoyed the PlayStation 2 game that was itself an expansion on the movie, which very cleverly snuck scenes in there. Like there's like the chase against Bon Voyage from the beginning.
Yep. Super
there
fun.
There's like an extended version of that and a lot of other scenes in the movie that was really really pretty clever about it. But as to what I wanted from this, I don't exactly know. I thought it looked good. There wasn't a whole ton to go on. I'm looking forward to seeing the Underminer.
Yeah. Well, it's basically picking up right where the last one left off.
Which is weird. That is a long time to go between movies that are going to be that closely connected.
But I feel like with animation, you can do that.
Well, clearly the stars are not going to have aged out of it visually.
Yeah. Well, I think my
guess... Is it Craig T. Nelson?
Yeah.
What if his voice is like this now?
You get a Clint Eastwood thing going?
Yeah, that's right.
I think likely that the opening is going to be like them facing the Underminer, and then it'll jump into, you know, just like they did in the previous Incredibles, where it opens with his wedding day, then it jumps into like 5 years later or whatever.
Probably
they may
so.
Do that.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I don't know. It's a good trailer, and I'm curious about it. And it's Brad Bird still doing it, so I'm sure it's going to be good.
Exactly.
My issue, which I won't go into depth on, is weirdly a political one, and you could, if you look up The Incredibles and like conservative, the word conservative, you will find that there is a not like crazy conspiracy theories about like some of the a lot of conservative themes in there, which I noticed even at the time, and were not the my themes, I guess I should say. Obviously it was on top of that, it was still a great movie. Like, you know, I really liked The Incredibles, and I'm not against such themes as sometimes appearing. But there was something in the trailer that made me worry that it was like going to like pop up again, and so we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. The big news that just came out today is that Marvel's apparently doing another sort of soft relaunch. Yep. They just did this. Like, Legacy was less than a year ago.
Yeah. That's right. Legacy was is there,
and they didn't even follow through on a lot of stuff that was in Legacy. I don't know if they just kind of dropped it all.
Well, what I think is like. We've seen that they've kind of been getting hit hard in the fan press. There's kind of a general negative vibe towards Marvel, not towards their movies, which are booming,
right?
But like towards the comics, I've heard a lot of complaints from fans. What's interesting is that the complaints very rarely line up.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's there's too many events or whatever. Sometimes it's that it's not the characters they know. Sometimes it's that they keep renumbering. Sometimes I heard somebody saying that they don't have enough consequence.
Yeah.
And I thought that was weird because, if anything, they've been leaning more into that, so that, like, when Wolverine died, he was gone for, like, 4 years or something.
Yeah.
It was a long time. Yeah. And generally speaking, when something kind of big happens, they actually do tend to show the consequences
I think you're right. I think that's what's going on, Dave, is they somehow have managed to find a way to displease everyone.
Yeah, and I don't think all of the criticisms are fair, but there is definitely... That is the narrative that's been constructed, and I think there's a... Anybody who's is irked by anything at Marvel has kind of bought in on the narrative and is like, I too hate them.
Yeah.
which is too bad, because I feel like people in some cases are missing out some really good stuff that they've been doing these last several years.
I've been on board Marvel. I continue to be on board Marvel. I like a lot of what they're doing.
Yeah.
But this new... I mean, C.B. Sobolski's taking over as editor-in-chief.
Same time, I don't think we're wild about them renumbering either.
No, I hate the legacy numbering. And I don't love the idea of, now that we've just finally gotten people on board, what does this all mean? They're going to go back to the old numbering.
Yeah. It definitely seems like it's an emergency course correction.
It does.
Like, they saw the iceberg up ahead, and they're like, everybody on the ship, lean.
Well, that worked out for the Titanic. So.
Well, they didn't all lean at the same time, so this could be the course correction.
So, as always with these Marvel teasers, there's a little video, there's a big image that's done by Jim Chung this time, shows a bunch of characters. What's interesting is usually in the Marvel Now teasers, there were always a bunch of characters who were like, oh, who's that, or what's that, or what, you know, how's that going to ling out? And this is all pretty straightforward. It's like Thor has a golden arm and a golden hammer, but it's Thor.
Yeah,
it's
right. The Thor Odinson, you know,
and
traditional.
Like, I mean, I'm glad to say Miss Marvel is in there, Captain Marvel's in there. There's a notable lack of all new Wolverine.
Yep.
Which I'll be very unhappy if they're going to do away with that. But I'm hoping that the teams are going to just keep.
I mean, she'll be on X-Men.
We actually expect that the poster is going to. It's not going to show every single title or whatever.
No.
Right?
No, it's probably showing the new relaunches.
Yeah.
But they did put in, like, Ant-Man and Wasp in there, which I think would be good.
So this is like Marvel Now. It's one of their relaunches. So it's going to be new books, new creative teams, that kind of thing. I always like this, always gives them a bit of a shot in the arm. I always kind of like it. I know some people hate all the renumbering, hate the new series. I'm for the series and miniseries approach, so I'm good with them occasionally doing
it. We've also noticed that, you know, like, I am actually very happy that Marvel has never done a hard reboot.
Me too.
That the comics I read as a kid, the story where Spider-Man fought the Juggernaut and it was like he was fighting the frickin' Terminator.
Yeah.
Like, that still is history and that's canonical and everything like that. And basically everything is, minus the occasional tweak from an Infinity Gem or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a story that simply needs to be simplified for clarity's sake, like Scarlet Witch's backstory or something like right. that. But I generally like that. It does mean that it can see, like, I think because DC has done so many hard reboots, people perceive the Marvel ones as the same.
I agree.
When in fact, they're just direction. Like, it's essentially a new direction. Like a, yeah. And really, in some ways, it's just like a new season of a TV show.
Yeah.
We know the next season of Star Trek Discovery is going to not be about the Klingon War, probably, or Mirror Universe stuff. It will have some new thing going on. But I'm not like, oh, God, they're renumbering. There's another episode number one. And I think sometimes that's the unfair thing that's levied against these.
It's true. We don't know everything that's coming out of this, but we do. A couple of them are starting to trickle out. We'll probably know all of them in a few weeks.
I can't believe season 6 of Game of Thrones is a new number one.
The small one is Venom.
Yeah, so Donny Cates with Ryan Stegman is going to be doing a Venom number one. He posted about this. He's super excited. He's a big Venom fan. I don't understand why they keep doing Venom series, but somebody's reading them.
Well, I mean, he does have a movie coming out. I mean,
yep.
People do love the character.
I don't
really
doing that either.
Well, that I don't really understand, but I do understand his popularity. So, as a child of that era and who enjoyed Venom at the time, I mean, that's still...
I understand that he has popularity.
It still has claws in people.
Because this is a bigger existential question about the very nature of Venom.
People like the anti-Spider-Man who's violent and kills.
I also don't understand why Deadpool has 3 books, so, you know.
I see that on
the same answer from the last question.
I see that on the big poster that Ant-Man and Wasp are together, so it looks like they're lining up with the movie a little bit there.
Yep. They're also...
Doctor Strange is all geared up and has a bigger beard.
They announced that Avengers number one is going to be... There's new Avengers, not surprised, coming out of the No Surrender story. It's by Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness.
Yep.
And it's got some of the classic team. It's
Cap, Thor,
Iron Man. And Iron Man, yeah. So.
And what they are doing is they're consolidating all the Avengers. There's not going to be new Avengers or Uncanny Avengers. They're just doing
they're like,
Avengers.
Well, Bendis, if you're going to leave, then we're going to drop the Avengers franchise. What do you think about that? I'm happy about it, though. I've always felt that like the more books a kind of a team has, like whether it's X-Men or Avengers, kind of the less special they're likely to feel. And I kind of like the idea of like there is one book and it is the Avengers, and when they show up, you're like, oh, it's the Avengers, not like this is the Avengers Unity team. Which I've liked some of the Avengers Unity team stories, but I'm ready for there to be just one Avengers team.
I actually agree with you on this, except with two caveats.
Avengers West Coast, we will always allow for, Randy.
That's the big one, West Coast Avengers, which Tom Brevoort hates, so we'll never get it, but that's the one I want.
What about when we assassinate him?
Okay.
We'll talk about that off mic.
After, that's 200 episodes.
Definitely don't let this continue.
I will definitely delete that.
Yeah, okay, cool. And what's the other
thing? And the other caveat is the X-Men, the current X-Men stuff where there's multiple teams is kind of working for me. Like, X-Men Gold is really good, X-Men Red turns out to have a different reason to exist. Astonishing X-Men, X-Men Blue, even though I'm not particularly fond of either one of those books, I understand the reason for existence.
Yeah, like, I don't want to, like kill anybody's fun. I just, like, that's, for me, like, I would say 2X books that are, like, the core books is about as much as I can do. I don't mind there being necessarily, like, an X-Force or something out there with a very clearly different mission statement or style of book.
Yeah.
But,
Well, they've definitely... That's what they've done with the different X-Books. They each have a different mission statement of what they're doing, so...
Yeah, but they still all kind of end up doing the same kind of stuff.
Bah. Anyways, Avengers number one. I do like this new team that they've cobbled together with some...
Is Living Lightning on that team?
No, but it looked like Ghost Rider was, and...
Okay, I don't want Ghost Rider to be an Avenger.
Eh.
You know what? For whatever reason, that doesn't particularly bother me.
Oh, that's right. That to me, is worse than Spider-Man. Ghost Rider does not belong in the Avengers. Doctor Strange does not belong in the Avengers. Wolverine does not belong in the Avengers.
Wolverine is not in the Avengers now.
But he was an Avenger. Bendis ruined it forever.
Ghost Rider, because I think he... Probably because of the semi-successful stuff on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is kind of considered a little more mainstreamy right now. And I think they just want to do more things with him. But I do generally agree, like, to me, he's a, if anything, he's either in a weird group like a Champions kind of thing, or the defenders. He's allowed to be in the Defenders because they're weirdos.
Yes, he could be in the
Defenders. They let anybody in.
Like Moon Knight shouldn't be. Moon Knight was in West Coast Avengers, and I kind of liked it, but honestly, probably shouldn't have been in there. Moon Knight should not be an Avenger.
Right.
They're
Avengers
also,
is supposed to be a certain thing, and they're not.
They're also elevating She-Hulk back to Avenger status,
that's
which,
I
really like.
That's good.
Ed McGuinness was giving her some guns in there.
Yeah.
I don't mean guns because she has carried guns before. I mean them forearms. She gonna crush.
Well, I really like Ed McGuinness as an artist, so I'm excited to see what
too.
He can do. The preview pages look great.
I've never been a fan.
Really?
I've never been a fan. And he's good, but for whatever reason, he's not my guy.
I like him, but he does bring such a specific aesthetic to it that it's going to be like Ed McGuinness's Avengers.
It's weird to think with Jason Aaron. Like, that's a weird mix.
Yeah.
Did they work together on that, what was that X-Men book that, or Spider-Man X-Men book that were coming out?
No, he was with Bacallo. He was with that was Spider-Man X. That was X-Men and Wolverine.
I don't remember them working.
Do you remember this short-lived thing?
Spider-Man X-Men?
I think there were two books that launched, and that was Astonishing Spider-Man and Astonishing X-Men, or something like that. Not Astonishing.
I don't think that was McGuinness.
Okay, yeah, it was Aaron and somebody. Yeah,
but Aaron's involvement actually is pretty exciting for me because I like him as a writer.
Like him as a writer, but he's a weird fit for Avengers.
He is, but I mean, he kind of sticks with books, and he has a pretty good vision that he executes well.
He's a weird fit, but he's going to stick around, Randy.
We've seen it with I wouldn't have thought
Hickman.
Wouldn't have thought of him as the best Thor writer, but he's one of the best Thor writers I've seen in years.
He clearly had a thing for that Norse mythology and the stuff he plugged into it.
I don't know that anybody's going to write the Avengers I want to read.
Right.
Even Mark Waid wasn't quite able to pull it.
Well, I mean, some of the story elements I know that they're going to bring are not your favorites because they're going to go back to the 10,000 BC Avengers, which I know is one of Aaron's big things.
I don't like that.
Which is why Ghost Rider is on the new Avengers team, because he was in that.
But maybe, yeah, that makes sense. But maybe they won't fight Kang for 20 issues.
I don't think Kang will be involved. and that's good. And unfortunately, fortunately, I don't besmirch him as an artist, but Mike Del Mundo is not a good person for an Avengers
book. Yeah, he's a bad fit. You know what's interesting is on the teaser poster, we don't know anything about creative teams yet, but both Jessica Jones, if I'm not wrong, I think Jessica Jones
is
right
there with
Luke Cage. And so is Miles Morales.
Yep.
So I'm curious who's going to take over, because no one but Bendis has written those characters.
It's true.
As a solo book.
Right. They've shown up in Champions and all these things, but yeah.
But someone's going to have to steward those characters, and I'm really curious who they get.
Yeah.
I don't know who you would. I mean,
I don't know.
Will they get a writer of color? Will they get a woman to write Jessica Jones?
I would love...
Are we thinking that Jessica Jones is going to have her own book?
I don't know. I would love to see David Walker go back to Power Man and Iron Fist, or Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. I think he'd do a great job with them.
Just give him the Defenders.
I'd love to see him write Defenders. I would also love to see him write Miles Morales. I think he'd probably be good at that.
I would not mind seeing a new Defenders book under Walker or something like that.
Yeah.
But I do think that things have gotten jumbled up, and Defenders now means something different because of Netflix.
Yep.
And, I don't know if Marvel has really an offbeat team name per se. The Champions is kid superheroes now, not the weirdos of Los Angeles.
Well, this is weird. Since the Champions has claimed the weird heroes of Los Angeles mantle, maybe they should make a weird team and call it the New Warriors. Steal that from the kids and give that to your weird Defenders.
No, because Night Thrash will rise up from the dead and destroy
them. Night Thrasher could be in that team. Is Night Thrasher dead?
I think he is.
I don't think so.
Really? I'm pretty sure he died.
He thrashes on in the afterlife. Thrash on, Xena.
All right, moving from Marvel over to DC. The Titans live action movie or show on their
streaming
network
service. Yeah,
they keep working on that. We don't know too much about it, but we do know they're going to have Doom Patrol in it.
Yeah, they've cast both Elastigirl and Miles
Calder. Yep.
Right, which has, ever since, I guess, Marv Wolfman's new Teen Titans, Wolfman and Perez's Teen Titans, has had a strong connective tissue with there because of Beast Boy. Changeling, whatever you want to call him. Very often the two have a link. But it is pretty cool that they're going to... I'm guessing they'll kind of create a little bit of a legacy sense, where maybe the Doom Patrol did exist before.
Maybe, I don't know. It says
or they could be concurrent.
I think they're going to do concurrent.
It says it's episode 5.
I just wonder if they might have, like, been around before them. Beast Boy, like, well, it'll be revealed that he had been in them. And they're going to be like, oh, they're the weird underground team. What were you doing with them? And, it depends on how they position them.
All I know is when I look at the names of all the people cast in Titans, I feel old because I don't recognize any of them. Oh, wait, I know Micah Kelly. I know Micah Kelly from Friday Night Lights. I don't know who she's playing.
I'm just saying, if we get a true-to-form robot man on the screen, that would be awesome.
Would it be CG or a dude in a suit?
I hope it's a dude in, like, the Protocop suit from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I think I would favor dude in a suit just because CG has certain downfalls.
I think dude in a suit, but enhanced by CG, I think is the way to go.
Yeah, probably so.
Right, so he's got like his head is where the wild things are.
Yes.
From that movie.
I mean, actually one of the wild thing monsters. Yes, exactly how I viewed it.
But I like this news. I think doing that is cool. Let's see, what are we going to get? Niles Calder, Elastigirl.
Yep, and then Robot Man and Negative Man, presumably.
Yep. And if they ever get into Grant Morrison territory, who knows what they're going to do.
Dorothy Spinner and Danny the Street.
Yep.
I was going to say, this is going to test the waters, then they're going to do Doom Patrol series, and then they're going to go up against the Brotherhood of Donna.
Unleash the Scissorman.
Unleash the Scissorman. Which I would totally be down with.
Honestly, if they were a little bit of a weirdness magnet, that would be kind of a fun thing for the show. Hey,
I'll just put this out there. Grant Morrison is doing television now.
But then there's a danger of them upstaging the Titans or whatever. Yeah, is it called Titans? It's called Titans. It's called Titans. So they're not little babies.
Yeah. No.
They're Titans of
industry. They dropped the team.
It's going to be more of a business kind of show. Yeah, it's going to be like Boiler Room kind
of. They're still a superhero team, but it's made up of J.P. Vanderbilt and. All those robber barons.
Carnegie.
So we've seen. So just to bring it back a little bit, we've seen.
Why would you want
to
do that?
We've seen Robin's suit. We've seen Hawk and Dove.
Yep,
are those the only ones we've seen?
I thought I saw an image of Starfire, but I may just be misremembering where people being upset that a black woman was playing Starfire. That's they were impossible. Just like, no! A black woman can never play an orange woman? It's impossible!
Oh, God.
Sorry. That's the worst of fandom for you there. Yeah, I'm just paraphrasing what they're
somehow
thinking.
I'll be curious to see the Doom Patrol and the rest of the Titans.
Yeah, me too.
Robot Man, when played right, is very much kind of works a bit like the Ben Grimm of
very much so.
He's not as mainstream as Ben Grimm is over in Marvel, but he's got the similar kind of regular Joe kind of personality, and I think he'd be a fun character.
I just hope the costume designer does the black jacket, the leather jacket.
I think that'd be cool.
That'd be great for him.
Yeah, I would go classic kind of gold or orangish gold look or whatever he's got with the jacket.
All right. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 21st. And, Nick, you and I found a bunch of stuff to read this week.
Yes, we did. I wasn't expecting when we were putting books on the wall. I'm like, I'm not seeing a bunch of I need to read. And then I walked away with a stack of about, like, 30 books.
Yeah, I read a ton of stuff this week. I liked a lot of stuff this week. Dave, how was your week?
I'm on the outs with comics this week. Comics and me, we're not such good friends.
You know, that happens every once in a while.
So why don't we start with your solitary pick?
Sure. I'm going to pick something that's something that I've in a way picked many times before. This is the collected edition of that thing. Of the Star Trek The Next Generation Mirror Broken, it's the trade paperback of it. Just as a reminder, even though I have talked about this all over the place, this is the Picard and Enterprise crew from the Next Generation era entering the Mirror Universe. Is it a spoiler to say that the Mirror Universe was a thing on Discovery? Because I talked about it a little bit while ago.
No, I don't think so.
But I guess I should say Mirror Universe stuff is in the air this year.
Yep.
And they never went into that in his era, not until Deep Space Nine came along. So we never got to see Mirror Universe Picard and stuff. And this series gave like such a fun interpretation of that. It's got the full, all the issues, all the variant covers and stuff like that. And they just announced a sequel is coming.
Did they?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that's I think there's even like a little bit of promo art or something for it.
Well, this one did so well in single issue format.
Yeah, I think it was kind of all but I was hoping it was all but guaranteed, but I guess I never knew what the sales were like nationally.
And the art by Woodward or J.K. Woodward.
Yep.
Yeah. I really like it. I really like this book. The only complaint I have is I know it's not part of it, but I wish they'd reprinted that Donny Cates one shot that was about a like alternate world where the Romans took over. Thematically in there, and I don't have that, and I would have liked to have it all in one trade.
Right.
But that's just my baby complaint.
That's true. That would, and that was not part of this story.
It's nothing to do with it.
What you need to do is go find all the single issues for this, the single issue of that, and you're then bound it together as one book.
Yep. Or just live without it.
They did include the issue zero or whatever from Free Comic Book Day.
That, yeah.
So if you want to see Barkley stab some people in the back, this is your chance. It actually is really cool. Anyway, yeah, it's a boring pick. Sorry, y'all.
It's not a boring pick. It's a very, very good pick.
Yeah, no, but it's one that I guess I should say we talked about every single issue of it.
Yep.
But that's how much I'm picking it.
Yep.
And it's super fun. And also go watch Discovery.
If you can't bonus pick a TV show.
I just did.
I'll back up his play for Discovery. I finally finished watching it. It was really good.
Well, as you know, I, of course, hated Discovery.
Yeah, it was your most hated show of the year so far.
I love Discovery. I'm just saying we don't pick TV shows.
I want to go back and pull quotes from Randy when Brian Fuller was pulling out, and you're like,
"Oh, I thought it was gonna be terrible." I was really
everything,
worried about it.
Yep. Everything I'm hearing
everything
about me
is awful.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. I'll be honest. I was not unconcerned either.
So well, right.
Those are fair warning signs usually. All right, what do you guys got?
So there are two Marvel sort of mini events starting this week. They're both going to be pretty self-contained.
Yes.
One of them is my pick. One of them is Nick's pick.
Correct.
So my pick is Doctor Strange Damnation. This is by Nick Spencer and Donny Cates. You might remember Nick Spencer as the most hated man on the comics from turning Cap into a Nazi.
It's true.
This.
But you might also remember that Rainey and I, and I don't know if Nick how much you were on, but like he had a really good run on Cap. And
I mean, Secret.
I'm a fan. I
Secret
like
Empire
Secret
was
Empire.
Like was like right. one of my favorite books.
Right.
Last year.
I liked his Cap stuff.
Yeah, I was actually just looking for stuff outside of that realm.
Yeah,
and like y'all love The Fix and various
it's
other.
One,
stuff.
It's one of those things where I actually am not a huge fan of Spencer's like indie work, but his work with Marvel is really
right,
good.
Right, kind of click for you.
Very
so,
click.
So he and Donny Cates collaborate on a story in which. It takes off from a pretty major part of Secret Empire, and fixes something from that in a way that causes an even bigger problem. I won't go into it too much. I will say it involves Las Vegas and Doctor Strange using his newly like in the Donny Cates run. Loki just gave him back basically all his power.
Yeah,
and he uses that, and the result is that there is a evil casino that pops up in Las Vegas run by Mephisto. And,
which I was actually trying to remember the last time I saw Mephisto.
It's been a while for me too.
I couldn't place it. It felt like it's been years since.
So
I've
a lot
seen.
Of this is a big sort of dialogue between the Mephisto, the devil, and Doctor Strange. It's really good. It's got really nice painted artwork by Rod Rice, and it leads to a sort of a team building here at the end that they're calling the New Midnight Suns, and I really like. I really like that team. So. I am excited to see where they go with this. I know it's going to be a miniseries, and I think there's going to be a couple one-shots, and I think the Doctor Strange is going to tie into it. So, it's pretty self-contained. It's just sort of a Doctor Strange miniseries, but I would give it a look. It's a good first issue.
I got a question.
Yep.
Was Mephisto created for Doctor Strange, or was he around in any other title?
He was created for Silver Surfer, wasn't he?
I believe that is
maybe
correct.
Maybe so, maybe so. It's interesting how iconic he's become as there, like, when you need an underworld dude, when you need a Satan stand-in, it's Mephisto.
Sure, I mean, you have Satanish with his chest face.
Right.
And you got yourself the Satan, who is son of Satan's father.
Right.
But if you want your devil of the Marvel Universe...
Yeah, Mephisto trumps Mephisto. Satan.
Yes.
It's true.
He appeared in Silver Surfer number 3 was his first appearance.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yep.
His arch foe is a space being who surfs.
Yes.
He hates those surfers.
Yes. By the way, space being who surfs was, I think, the original name for Silver Surfer, and they shortened it.
Stan was like, I think we can tighten that up.
Nick, what is your pick?
My pick is another big event from... Well, I say big event. I don't know how... self-contained this is going to be, if it's going to bleed over into other things.
The
but
fact that it... Well, one of the words in its title suggests that there will be more.
Yes, it is Infinity Countdown Prime, number one. And With Infinity and the... Is the Infinity Stones... Well,
the Countdown is honestly the part to me. That Countdown is Countdown to something.
Yes.
It's probably the Countdown to the relaunch.
I mean... It may be. That's more or less what it might be.
As a Prime, this is one of those ones where it's like when they do like a little bookend to a miniseries, like there's an Alpha and an Omega sometimes.
Yes.
And so this is the lead-in to the full series,
and
right?
And then there was the prologue from a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
that was the Adam Warlock special where, like, in case you guys don't know who Adam Warlock is, you dumbasses.
That was sort of the rundown of all of Adam Warlock, which obviously is going to be a major player.
Yep.
This Infinity Countdown Prime is sort of a who's who and where are the Infinity Stones issue.
They do a neat job of, like, right on the opening page explaining, like, here's what their powers are and what, you know...
All the stones, yes.
Yeah, like... And in, like, very concrete terms, like, you can teleport with this one. You can, you
grant
know...
grant telepathy and intelligence, or travel through time.
Yep, and then they proceed to...
Then they're like, if you got all of them, you're a freaking god.
Yep, and they proceed to show who's got them.
Yes. And it definitely is a who's who of the Marvel Universe. As we know, Wolverine has one of the stones.
Do we know how he got that?
No, we do not know how he
got
it.
But we also don't know how he got back from the grave.
Well, he was stuck in that encased metal or adamantium cocoon. We don't know who broke him out of that.
Maybe he hatched.
Maybe he hatched. It's possible. Wolverines are known to hatch, right?
Maybe he's been wobbling around in that giant chunk of adamantium and he fought somebody that as a big adamantium blob. I'm just making up dumb shit.
I will say there's the opening sort of action sequence with Wolverine is beautifully rendered by Mike Deodato. Yeah. I think he draws one heck of a Logan.
There's also some humor in there because of who he ends up talking to.
Yes. Also, I love Wolverine looking kind of diminutive in stature. He's supposed to be really tiny.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little compact dude in his old, the old buckskin jacket and cowboy hat.
But, you know, with Hugh Jackman playing him, he kind of got that sort of more...
it's like people kind of forgot.
Forgot that... Because I remember when I started reading X-Men comics, he was like 5'1".
Right.
And he was tiny.
Every single foe he fought referenced it. Like, they called him a runt and stuff all the time. And if he was ever standing next to anybody, he was always, like, at their belt level. Even if it was Kitty Pride.
And he's back to... Deodato draws him in that fashion. Yep. I was very appreciative
like a hairy
Bilbo. Yes. There's also, you know, Loki pops up, because Loki is definitely involved in everything.
I like their take on Loki. I like seeing him around.
Yeah. There's another human with one of the stones on Earth, which I thought was,
that was
fantastic.
Pretty funny.
Oh, that was my favorite part.
We definitely cannot reveal anything about that.
But that was my favorite part.
Then we find out some of the stones are and where they are in other locations in the Marvel Universe,
including
and who has them.
Multiverse weird, a little bit of multiverse weirdness there.
Yep. Kind of a who's who using some Dan Abnett Lanning Guardians characters.
Yep.
An old Fantastic Four character.
Yep, that one was interesting. I think I was happy to see him back because I've always liked that character.
I like this new version.
I said not saying who it was.
I like this new version of Warlock's outfit. He's got the big flowing cape like Doctor Strange.
I was actually thinking that although I know little about Adam Warlock, I did learn a ton from that Adam Warlock special. I kind of have liked all his iterations.
Yeah.
From the old Jim Starlin one where I think he had the wristbands that Drax and every single other Jim Starlin cosmic character had back then, to the more recent ones. That red and black look is pretty cool.
And then we get to some more cosmic players involved. So I actually thought this was kind of a great primer for...
If you think about it, they started with kind of like it's the most down-to-earth like hero kind of there is in a lot of ways, Wolverine. And they end with somebody with characters that are way up there.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of a who's who in the Marvel Universe and basically saying it's going to involve everybody and going to have some ramifications. But like I said, Jerry Duggan is writing, Mike Deodato is doing fantastic on the art, so I am excited to see where the story goes.
Deodato really is a hugely talented artist.
Yeah, he's done an amazing job on every book he's done that I've
loved. I only wish he had finished out the Thanos thing with Jeff Lemire.
That would have been great.
But he's still doing... It's interesting because he's a guy who can kind of draw these very realistic... highly rendered and shaded characters and very detailed. So I would not have immediately thought, oh, this is the guy to do something kind of cosmic. But he did so good on Thanos that I have no doubt, he does obviously a great job here. So that guy can draw big old celestial beings and Wolverine just as well.
Yeah.
You know, also, that's the thing I liked about Infinity Countdown. I was expecting cosmic. I was expecting, you know, big cosmic. And it's not really that. I mean, it's got the
germs and everything. There are elements.
It's all over the Marvel Universe.
It's all over the Marvel Universe, yeah.
But like, still Earthbound, at least primarily at the moment.
Yeah. Well, especially the one guy who gets the gem is as Earthbound as you get.
Yeah, it's as Earthbound as it
exactly.
gets.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I like this take on the Infinity Gems. Instead of it being a big cosmic quest for power, it is more of a, what happens when these items of power fall into the hands of different people? Yeah, it's almost like a genie kind of thing.
Yeah, no doubt it will be a... I think that's exactly right. It's like, well, what would happen if a relatively good person found a genie? What would happen if a relatively bad person found a genie?
What would happen if Wolverine found a genie?
Like a stadium full of beer, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The little known what if Wolverine found a genie?
Unfortunately, he did not get the gem that creates items.
No. Nick, what's your backup
pick? My backup pick is another Marvel book, is Mighty Thor number 704.
Mm-hmm.
This marks sort of, we've got three issues left, or after this, two issues left of the series, which is, the story is titled The Death of the Mighty Thor, so we are definitely kind of roaring towards the end of the Jane Foster era.
Yep.
I was noting, though, that that iteration of Thor has been around for like 5 years at this point, which is pretty darn a great run for the character.
Right. For the criticism that Marvel sometimes doesn't have enough consequences.
I'm like, well, she's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And she's been involved in not only her own book, but in multiple books and throughout the universe.
Yep.
But this one is definitely kind of sort of a Ragnarok in a lot of ways, because the Mangog, which has been a character that if we've seen iterations before. I can't remember, did...
I'm trying to recall the origins. I don't know the use of... I can't say I hear Mangog and say, I want to read that.
Right.
But I've seen any character become re-envisioned by writers and become interesting.
Basically, it's a monster that has occasionally come back because of... Asgardians not really holding up their end as gods and sort of a retribution.
Meta stuff with gods and Asgardians.
Yeah, the Asgardians not really answering the prayers and not really being for the people.
That's an interesting idea.
And Odin and Thor and
they're not like Scott Elder. He's a dealer for the people.
Exactly.
I'm so sorry, people.
all the times Thor and Odin and the Asgardians have been able to beat him back. This time, however, he is like super powerful and he has basically just destroyed all the gods. He's even like beaten Heimdall. And this issue is all about sort of him taking on Odin and Thor at once, while sort of Jane Foster is given a choice. Because basically every time she comes, she chooses the hammer and comes back as Thor, her cancer treatments are basically get wiped away. And when she goes back to being Jane, the cancer is advanced, having no radiation at all. So it is being Thor is slowly killing her, and she sort of has to make the ultimate choice of what to do. So, I mean, it's a sad, very kind of poignant story that is going on, but it is also sort of everything I want out of a Thor story, with this larger-than-life cast of characters. And
it is fascinating to think that when Jane Foster was first created, no doubt Stan Lee was like, Blake needs a girlfriend. He's like, what about this nurse? And I'm sure there was no more thought put into it really than that. And it's interesting that she, you know, to imagine that, like, decades later she would go on to, like, assume the role is pretty fascinating. That's one of the reasons I like Giant, that they haven't rebooted fully Marvel.
Yeah.
Is that that is, like, part of their history.
Well, and also incorporated into this issue is a history lesson of Jane's, like, history. Like, her first husband and her dealings with her mother. Stuff I didn't necessarily know.
Do you get the sense that it's stuff that was invented by Jason Aaron, or that they're doing calling back all little bits and pieces from maybe decades past?
I don't know all of it. I think some of it must have
gotten more into her background.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there are callbacks. I mean, they might have been Jason Aaron Avengers, but I don't think so.
Okay.
We even see Donald Blake show up, which Thor's alter ego a long time ago.
Yep. Kids don't know that once upon a time, Thor wasn't Thor all the time. He had a secret identity as a doctor who had a cane.
And sometimes he was a construction worker named Sigurd Jarlsson.
That's true.
But overall, this has been a fantastic run for Jason Aaron. I'll be a little sad to see, because I assume now that he's going to be taking over Avengers, he will be leaving Thor, and that's a little sad. But I feel like...
That's a hearty run.
It's a hearty run that he's been on, so I have all that to reread at some point. So,
word.
Randy, what is your backup pick?
My backup pick is Quantum and Woody number 3, in which a goat gives birth to the father of Quantum and Woody.
Okay.
Not kidding. Basically, the goat...
Aren't they already born, Randy? How can he... What?
Yeah.
What?
So their dad died. Quantum's dad, who is also Woody's adoptive dad, died, and somehow his energy patterns or his mind was put into this goat.
Uh-huh.
And it is reborn as an energy pattern, not unlike how Quantum and Woody are both energy patterns. And over the course of this, Quantum decides he's going to try and save his dad, who has about 72 hours left before he dissipates back in energy. And Woody decides to take his dad out to have the best 3 days of his life, which usually involves, like, strippers and booze. And throughout
one of those
this,
classy comics, isn't it?
It is. And throughout this, there is, in a Quantum Woody tradition, sort of a flashback to what it was like for Quantum growing up, like how he got his first glasses, how he decided he wanted to become a scientist, you know, being like the only black kid at MIT, or, you know, one of the few, his early relationships. It's a really good, it's sort of two stories, it's a flashback, and it's a modern story, and it's sort of about him missing his dad and what he wants to do for him. And
this actually sounds like one of those kind of things that superhero comics are actually can be surprisingly good at.
Yeah.
Which is to tell a story using a ridiculous idea of like a sort of temporarily resurrected father.
Yep.
In order to talk about people's relationships with their father.
Yeah. It's really good. It has some fun stuff, has some action, has some really funny bits, and has some nice touching moments. And This version of Quantum and Woody, I actually really love what Priest did with originally, but I didn't know there was a good idea to bring it back without him. But Daniel Kippen Smith, the writer here, has actually done a really good job of selling these characters in a way that reminds me how much I like them and why I like them. And I think a lot of people should be checking this book out. Ninjak has been a big hit for us. I think people should check this one out too, because Valiant has a lot to offer that I think a lot of people don't necessarily know. There's also a bunch of other stuff on my list this week. Some of my favorite Marvel books, so Amazing Spider-Man number 796, which picks up on the J. Jonah Jameson knowing who Peter Parker is, which is a hilarious bit. It has Mary Jane in there. Flash Thompson is anti-Venom. The Green Goblin returns. Big developments for Norman Osborn. It's definitely... Slott's doing a big final story, but he's also not just doing like big events. There's some good stuff going on. Daredevil 599 is the issue before 600. It's dealing with Muse and Kingpin as mayor of New York. Tales of Suspense number 102. This Hawkeye Winter Soldier is the buddy comedy I never knew I wanted, and I'm really disappointed it's only a 5-issue series, because I love the two of them sort of hating each other. It is Lethal Weapon and superheroes.
Why do
spies.
They hate each other?
They're so different. Winter Soldier's like an on-task kind of guy. Hawkeye's kind of a slacker.
Yeah.
Like it's the buddy comedy thing.
Okay. Yeah.
There's also some nice twists and turns with Black Widow. It's really good. It's sort of a spy action movie mixed with buddy comedy. It is right up my alley. X-Men Gold number 22 is more of the Brotherhood stuff, and it's really good. Vertigo has a new book called Deathbed by Joshua Williamson and Riley Rosmo that is about a writer and a weird adventurer type dude. I don't even know how to describe it, but it was a fun first issue.
Josh Williamson, who did Nailbiter
and Flash.
Flash and Birthright. Yeah, yeah.
James Bond has another great one-shot in M. This is written by Declan Shalvey, and artist by somebody.
Oh, is that a one-shot?
PJ Holden is the artist, and he's a really good artist. I don't know where he's come from before, but I really like these one-shots. They did one for Moneypenny that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
This M one-shot sort of flashback to his time as a soldier in the island of the Time of Troubles, and it reminds me a little bit of the story that I liked in, say, the Patriot Games.
Yeah,
so, very cool.
Worth a look. Maestro's number 5, which is Steve Scroach's sort of Millar-esque story of a young boy who's the ultimate mage of this weird dimension. I've been really enjoying that. Mage number 6 was delayed a week by Diamond, but we now have it, and it's good. And that's everything on my list. What else we got?
Let's see. Dark Horse from Karen Berger's sub-imprint has Mata Hari.
Yep.
Nick, did you read this?
No, I didn't get a chance.
So what I had a chance to take a look at, it looks like it is a quasi-historical look at the famous spy Matahari, and I think, is it like the early 20th century, I believe? Yeah. That addresses both sort of the mythologized elements of her story and, like, propaganda against her, the nature of being a female spy, and sort of, I gather, some, you know, misogynistic, assessments from afar. But it looked like an interesting notion into both kind of, like, gender roles, early spies in the, like, 19-teens and 20s. The art's really nice. It's definitely one of the books this week that I want to give a full read through to check on. She was the original femme fatale, sort of. Let's see. There's a Brave and the Bold miniseries.
Yep.
That I thought was interesting, if only for the weird team-up. It's like Batman and Wonder Woman trying to solve a murder mystery dealing with the it begins with, like, the murder of a Celtic god. And I believe, like, involves, like, the land of the fairy and all that stuff. And, sounded interesting. Let's see. It's a Black Panther annual that's just worthy of note because it's got, like, three or four different stories from a lot of the big, basically all the big.
Well, apparently they Black are Panther in writers. Stories for all those different writers.
Kind oh, of interesting. Like a hypothetical, or like, not a hypothetical, but a capper to each of their runs.
Yes.
An epilogue, maybe.
Yeah, so Christopher Priest and Don McGregor and Reginald Hudlin.
Then there is the Batman Telltale game. I forget what it was called. Batman the Telltale series, I think maybe is it. But it is a miniseries out called Sins of the Father that, from my understanding, is that this takes place between Season 1 and Season 2 of that game. I have not played that game, but if you have, there's a good chance you're... And if they, of course, are very well known for their strong writing.
In the middle of that game.
Their previous one, was it the
Fables?
I don't know if that was their actual previous one, but one of the ones that a lot of our customers played and really liked was the Fables. Yeah, what do they call it? Something...
I didn't play that one.
What was the name of the Fables? Wolf Bigby? Wolf thing?
Wolf Among Us.
Wolf Among Us, yeah. Anyway, I presume that, Nick, you say you're playing it?
Well, yeah, last month the Batman series was their free downloadable game, okay. So I took advantage of it and downloaded it all.
Yeah, yeah.
I've liked it so far.
Cool. And yeah, so this takes place between the two, Season 1 and Season 2 of it. The artist, Raphael Ienco, is that right? Does anybody know him? He's another.
Name's familiar.
He's another one of these guys from the Frank Quitely school. Frank Quitely and...
oh, yeah.
Who are the other? There's like one or two other Quitely type people.
Aaron Cooter
is the one trying to think of, and I think there's even one more. But anyway, I like seeing that's the influence. And then there's some book from Titan Comics called Bloodborne. I think this is based on a video game, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Just wanted to mention that in case there's Bloodborne fans out there. Yeah. I don't know.
A few more on my list. Hit Girl number one, which is Mark Millar and artist Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. Doing a new story about everyone's favorite murderous child. I really have no...
Right in the wake of, like, last week, he's clearly doing some focus on this because...
Kick-Ass was last week.
There was
a new
Kick-Ass last week.
I have no real love for Hit Girl, but I kind of went into this with an open mind, and I actually found it to be kind of humorous insanity.
Anarchic fun.
Yeah, which is exactly what you want.
It's meant to be, yeah.
Lots of guns... her father shows up in sort of a flashback, which
you will believe
I read,
a kid can swear.
I basically read a Nicolas Cage voice because that's what it's supposed
to
be.
Right. Yep.
But I thought it was a really good issue. Damage number two, which continues the sort of Hulk in the DC universe powered by Our Man technology.
Right.
I actually think that it's the second issue was better than the first. So Venditti and Tony Daniel are telling a pretty interesting tale of a. Sort of a soldier trapped in the... or given the power, this power to cause so much chaos and using villains like the Parasite and Giganta.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, there was a lot more DC integration into the universe than I was expecting, and I've really enjoyed it.
And the second printing is out of
number one is out as well. Batman 41, which sees Poison Ivy taken to new heights of abilities as she takes over pretty much the entire world.
Yeah.
Michael Janin does some amazing art in here, just beautiful. But I think this is a two-part story. This is the first part. It was really, really good.
Animal death quotient?
It's Poison Ivy, she doesn't kill animals. What are you talking about?
She doesn't kill plants.
She doesn't kill plants.
She'd kill a horse like that.
I guess that's true. And then Astonishing X-Men number 8. New jumping on... Or no, it's the part 2 of A Man Called X. As Xavier is sort of reborn in a body and fighting a foe we have not seen in some time since, I guess, the Claremont days, which I thought was interesting.
Interesting. Xavier's been reborn in a few bodies in his time.
Yes.
Yeah, he really has.
He's a lucky dude in that sense.
Yes.
He's like, oh, I think I've got a bad knee. I need to go be reborn in a new Shi'ar body.
But also, you know, he's also died a lot.
Yeah, he has died a lot.
We talk about Jean Grey, but he's the guy who's actually died a lot. And also, you never know if he's walking or not, so...
That's true. And then one last one, and I didn't get a chance to read this, but I've always been a fan of Brandon Graham, Multiple Warheads, and this is a new one-shot featuring more of that world. It is sort of the intricate detail that Brandon Graham does, so there's a lot to sort of take in. So if you're a fan of that, or him, definitely check it out.
All right. We're going to be back in just a second. We're going to talk about... Nick's going to inform us on what happened at Toy Fair. Not that he was there, but he followed it fanatically on the internet.
Yes, of course I did.
And then we're going to do our spoiler review of Black Panther, although we will give you a spoiler warning before we do that. So come back for that. Okay, so we've seen Black Panther, but first, Nick is going to tell us all the things that happened at Toy Fair. Everything. Go, Nick.
Well, I don't know if I'll cover everything, but I'll cover some big stuff.
No, I made big promises. You got to live up to them now.
Well, I mean, Toy Fair is one of those things I think most toy fans look forward to because you get to see what your how bad your wallet is going to be hurting for the next year.
Where does it take place?
New York.
New York, okay.
Yeah. There's other... like abroad toy fairs that go on that are pretty popular, but this is sort of the San Diego for toys,
right?
So all of the companies,
San Diego, New York,
go there, put on a pretty big display. We'll occasionally put in sneaks throughout the weekend, so they'll have their initial and then they'll sneak a few figures in over the course of the weekend to sort of get people coming back and see what they've got to offer.
Can I open with a query?
Sure.
I would like to know if there are figures based on either, if you happen to notice, because I assume you're going to kind of zero in on the superhero stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Anything from either Star Trek Discovery or the Orville?
Not that I saw specific to figures. I know that they're going to do like a line of Star Trek ships,
yep,
which I think has already started to hit, but I saw some of the ones on the Discovery ship and
if nothing
the
else, they're definitely doing the Eagle Moss ones. And
the line I saw,
yeah,
which I thought was very...
My co-podcaster has been getting those, and the Shinzo one looks really cool.
Yeah, I was very impressed with them.
Okay, so yeah, now fire on. I just wanted to check on that real quick.
I don't know. Mezco is doing their 112 figures, which are sort of the 12-inch... Well, they're not 12. They're about 8-inch. But they have fabric costumes. So they've done a ton of them, but they announced like Cyclops and a bunch of new figures, a John Wick figure. These are like super detailed. They range from like $80 to $150, depending on sort of complexities.
Okay, so they're like starting around where like the Figma figures do and going up.
Yeah, they're sort of a Figma, but with like cloth. And tons of accessories.
Do you want to be able to take off John Wick's dress? Well, now you can.
Yes, exactly. Do you want to see Keanu Reeves naked? I'm sorry. No. Weirdly, Tekken is getting a new line of figures, which I didn't really expect.
Another game or something going on? I feel like there was a Tekken comic just recently.
I believe Tekken 7 is coming out soon, which, dear God, there's been 7 Tekkens. I can't wrap my head around that. How many Hayachi figures do you need?
Somewhere out there is a collector of that.
I'm sure.
He's like, you've just dishonored me.
I'll just get to some of the big ones, which is Star Wars.
Yeah.
They definitely announced all their Han Solo line. Don't look at it if you don't want spoilers, but I will say the Lando one I will probably buy because it is amazing, and I want a Donald Glover figure on my shelf somewhere.
Then you can also finally create Lando's Commandos.
But I think the ones that sort of stole the show for Star Wars is that they announced they're doing a Zuckuss figure, which has been long kind of wanted from
Zuckuss
collectors.
Zuckuss, your day is here.
And also a Gamora Gamorrean Guard 6-inch figure. These are all 6-inch, by the way.
Okay. Have they not made one of those?
No. And of course, it's got fur and all.
I got against fat aliens.
I don't know, Dave. But people have clamored for a Gamorrean Guard. I was not one of those people, but it definitely looks nice.
They're iconic, yeah.
I might need somebody
to lead you to a Rancor dungeon. Gamorrean Guard is what you want.
Yeah. They also announced that their Star Wars for their 3¼ line. They're announcing their largest playset ever that they're building, which is Jabba's skiff. It is the huge.
It's more like to actual full scale than it would have been when I was a kid. It's four feet long. Yeah.
And has two levels with several different compartments. Comes with like a scale Jabba.
Where's the pleasure dome?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Jabba's pleasure.
It's the USS flag for our generation.
It's a little shorter than the flag, but okay. Yes. Not by maybe a couple feet. And then sort of the big one for me, because this is what takes all my money or excess money that I have, is the Marvel Legends. In rare form, they've, I think, announced 7 waves that are coming this year, which is insane, but they're sort of tying in with all the movies.
So that means more like 1 every month and a quarter or
pretty
something
pretty
like
much,
that.
But they're tying in with all the movies. So there's going to be a new wave for Infinity War. There's a new Spider-Man wave that should be about hitting, that has like the Lizard Build-A-Figure, which I don't really want all the figures in it, but Lizard I really, really want.
I like Lizard.
They announced another Spider-Man wave that they're doing a Dr. Octopus figure again, which is based off of sort of his classic appearance, which I've been wanting a Dr. Octopus
jumpsuit.
The green and yellow jumpsuit with they announced Cloak and Dagger as part of that wave, which I can't wait for because the cloak.
Where are our Runaway figures?
I don't know. Well, they did Nico. Not too long ago.
Where's our Runaways figure? They had a whole Hulu series.
Now, the problem is that the Runaways basically like kids. Although they should have like giant robot hands and
there's definitely ways.
Nico and a Velociraptor and like they could have special effects and cool stuff that they come with.
It's true. What else? There's a couple of Deadpool waves, which I'm sure is exciting to you guys. But
what's in them?
One of the Deadpool waves is
Sassy Deadpool.
Is Sasquatch is the build the figure? which comes with like. Other figures in there is like the 90s Cable and Domino.
And we were talking about, you were reading with some of those early Alpha Flight appearances and some X-Men comics retro reading the other week.
Yep.
And I always remember Sasquatch in his first appearance, the X-Men are trying to like leave on a 747. Sasquatch stops it on the ground, like digs his claws into it, and then throws the entire thing backwards into the hangar. And I was like, holy
Sasquatch
crap.
Has never been tougher. It
was
stronger.
The strongest he has ever been.
Well, Sasquatch is supposed to be as strong as the Hulk.
Yeah, but I think they don't usually quite portray that, it seems.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like, that was for sure, like, that was even like upper echelon for like the Hulk.
Yep.
The other wave of Deadpool figures, because he needed two waves for his movie, has the Sauron build-a-figure.
Okay.
What
are all these Deadpool figures? Like surfing Deadpool?
One of them is
him
in his boxers.
Yeah, one of them is his heart boxers with fuzzy slippers. The other's in his sort of X-Men this kind of weird X-Men outfit that he had. One's his classic 90s first appearance.
Okay.
And then you got Cable and Domino and those guys.
Okay.
Where's our GW Bridge figure?
I kind of want that. Even though I had the old Mattel figure. Bishop is in that wave, sort of in his classic 90s outfit.
So Liefeld created Bridge and Cable. Was he just obsessed with architecture and construction?
Yes.
There was also Tar, of course.
And the flat plane.
That's right. Carbon steel.
Two other things.
Sorry, what were you saying there just a minute ago when I talked over you rudely?
I don't remember.
Oh, sorry.
Two other big things for Marvel Legends. The first is they're doing the Marvel Cinematic first 10 years. They're going back and doing for each movie a 2-pack set featuring figures that they never made. So they're doing like a Red Skull in his appearance with one of his Hydra soldiers.
Are they going to make a Rhodey?
No, they did a Rhodey.
Okay. They're doing straight up Rhodey?
Yeah, they're doing a Tony Stark.
But no, they need to make one that looks like who's the original actor.
They're not going to do that.
They got to do it.
It's Howard Rhodey.
You got to be real. And then they have to come up with an in-story, no prize-worthy explanation for what happened.
There was an airplane crash, plastic surgery.
Yep, they're exactly. Doing it. It's just that simple.
They're doing the three-pack of Mandarin, Pepper Potts, and I think a flamed-up Rhodey from Iron Man 2, or Iron Man 3. I think he's got flames. I don't know. Okay, there's something in there. There's a Cap and Crossbones. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a couple more. There's a souped-up Iron Man from the first one. There's a Tony Stark and the first-generation Iron Man suit, he built in the caves. And then, because Walgreens needs more
exclusives,
they're doing their Fantastic Four wave, and they finally announced The Thing, which looks fantastic, and Silver Surfer, which I'm excited for. But, again, it's just a sort of a... this is how much I'm going to lose in money. So, you know, whatever.
All right, so we all went and saw Black Panther.
Yes.
This is our official spoiler warning.
Some have seen it more than once.
I might have seen it three times in 4 days. So, yeah, this is your official spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it for God's sake. It made like $400 million this weekend.
Right, you might as well add some more on.
Yeah. Okay, spoilers from this point on. I loved this movie. It is not my favorite Marvel movie, but if someone were to tell me it's their favorite, I understand why they would say that.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat.
I liked it quite a bit, and I've chatted about it so much that I can give no more detail. I liked it. That's the end of my review. No, all right. I'm just kidding. But it is sort of true. But I've had some very entertaining conversations about it, and I really liked it, and conversations have been about things like Everybody Loves His Sister. Shuri.
Yeah, Shuri really kind of stole the show.
Stiller. You told me something I did not know, which was that there was a James Bond influence on it.
Yeah.
Which I would not have guessed, but then when you pointed out, it's like, oh, well, is it Nakia, who's his ex, who kind of has the James Bond cold open rescue sequence with her, which functions like that. The trip to Korea.
The casino.
Into, like,
the full-on thing.
What I thought was interesting is that it was not so overt, though, that I was like, oh, that was kind of weird that they structured it on a James Bond movie. Like, it didn't occur to me, even though had I thought about it, it's kind of obvious. But there was also so much stuff with sort of political intrigue and just exploring Wakanda that thankfully it didn't feel like, oh, this is the one where Marvel just made a James Bond movie.
No.
You know, that would have sucked.
But I feel it's the same thing Marvel did with, say, Winter Soldier, where Winter Soldier is a 70s spy thriller grafted onto the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
This is a James Bond movie. But like you say, it is more than that, because it is also about political intrigue and tradition and, you know, the responsibility of if you have all this, what is your responsibility to the world? And I love that...
And a little bit of Shakespeare.
Sure. I love that Eric Killmonger has a point. There are people already seen this Killmonger was right kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting because Killmonger is the dark mirror of Black Panther, which I know a lot of people don't like the whole the villain is the mirror of the hero.
Yeah.
But I thought it was done really well here.
Well, he's not he's not the mirror in the sense that he's also, like, he's not... Well, was he royalty
he
as
lost
well?
His father... he was royalty.
Yeah, he was. That's right, that's right.
He lost his father tragically. He is struggling with what, you know, he has a claim to the throne of Wakanda.
Right.
He gets the Black Panther powers. I mean, he is very much a
they
a
ran
mirror.
With that a little bit, yeah.
And I thought they did the great job with that.
He's a charismatic actor. Michael B. Jordan is amazing.
Right. Who famously worked with the director on his previous two movies.
Yep.
Only one of which I have seen, Creed, the Rocky sequel that was awesome.
And then was Fruitvale Station.
And that one, which I don't know anything about, but people tell me is good but sad.
Yep. But I think one of the things they did here that Marvel always does is they took all the comic stuff and then they basically distilled it down to what's the best version of it.
Yep.
So Martin Freeman playing Everett Ross as sort of an older CIA guy instead of a State Department younger guy works really well here. Claw as the guy who's just really, really loves
being
mayhem,
a bad guy.
was fantastic.
Yeah, that Andy Serkis was. If he was not living it up, he sure looked like he was.
Yes, he was.
Nakia in the comics is a Adora Milaje, a younger one who falls in love with T'Challa even though she's not supposed to. reinventing her as sort of his lost love and someone who is a consummate spy who wants to goes out and does good in Wakanda's name out in the world.
Yep.
That was a really good reinvention.
His
mother reinvented it. Angela Bassett is fantastic as sort of a regal figure.
Yep.
His sister, who was Black Panther in the comics, is much more well-defined here and really steals the show.
Right, and is also kind of in the Running with the Bond thing, his M.
His Q.
Or his Q, yeah.
And then Okoye and the other Dora Milaje are perfectly realized.
Yeah.
Wakabi and the Border Tribe and their, like, magic shield blanket things.
They're great.
Like, all the technology is really well utilized. All the work that was done for the various tribes and the council and that kind of thing, M'Baku and the Jabari tribe are fantastic.
One of the things I really liked was just the way Wakanda was realized.
Yeah,
because I liked, to be honest, I have never plugged in fully in any particular Black Panther run. The closest was Priests, which I read much of that run, but didn't resonate with me long enough to keep my issues and revisit particularly.
Yeah.
I mostly think of Black Panther the same way I think of Doctor Strange and a few other characters as, like the Inhumans and stuff, as I like them as supporting characters.
Yeah.
But this was an example of, yeah, like you said, they brought together all the elements that are best in it and made him a lead that I really liked.
Yeah.
And they also made, what I was going to say is they made Wakanda a place that I want to go to. They very cleverly kind of built up a fictional history,
mm-hmm.
and entwined with vibranium, that was really cool. They every one of the five tribes had a really distinct identity.
Yep.
And I felt like the movie was just like, what's the director's name?
Ryan Coogler.
Ryan Coogler. He was just extremely clear in what he wanted. Like, for this could have been something where I would feel like, if I took somebody who's like a civilian, like my sister or something, to mm-hmm. see it, where she would just be like, "What?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand at all what's going on." But they made they laid out very clearly, not simply or like overly simple, but in such a way that it feels like this really awesome sort of like sandbox of cool ideas, like a place you would want to go play in a role playing game or an MMO or something like that.
Yep.
Nick, what were some of the stuff that you liked, or was there anything you didn't like also?
I'll start with I liked most of what all you guys have said so far. I mean, Shuri definitely kind of stole it from me. She's a great character. The take is fantastic.
She brought some needed levity to the movie, I think, that otherwise she very specifically was there to, like, take the piss out of her brother.
I mean, you basically, the first time you see her, she flicks him off,
yeah.
Which is sort of setting a precedent for that character.
Right. It was the keynote.
But, I mean, her comments about healing the Winter Soldier and Freeman are great. The technology is amazing.
I think one of the things I really liked, the way they did the vibranium, has is almost magic level technology.
Yep.
But also, it's a little thing, but that the vibranium created, sort of interacted with the plant life and created the heart-shaped herb.
Yeah.
That's a little thing. Like, in the Marvel Universe, in the comics, you could just add stuff. There was a heart-shaped herb to give them. Sure, okay. There's radiation. There's all kinds of things. In a movie universe, in a shared universe, you want everything to tie together a little bit more. So it makes sense for vibranium to be the thing that creates the heart-shaped herb. But, like, DC, in general, is so embarrassed about their stuff that they won't do things like this.
Right.
So to even have the heart-shaped herb and that part of the story, I think was really neat. And to tie into the vibranium to give it, like, that realism for people who need that realism, I think was really clever.
The movie sort of gave Wakanda to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It fleshed out the world even more.
Yeah.
And you can see more pathways that they can go and crossovers they can do.
Right, well, like, by showing the different tribes and giving you, it's like, a neat view of the city, which was this mixture of, like, high-tech elements, but kind of a still very grounded people,
mm-hmm.
where you saw, like, city marketplaces that looked more traditional. And like, it was a fascinating mixture. And it was a place where I was like, there are endless storytelling possibilities here. Whereas in the comics, they have really had that unified vision, is what it is. There have been neat ideas, but not a unified vision.
My only gripe is very small, honestly, and it's the final battle. I feel like it was a little too CGI-ish. And
a lot of people have noted, and I did, that the CG had an almost slight unfinished look. It's, I suppose, a testament to, like, not just there, but in a few other times in the movie, too.
See, I think what struck me throughout the movie, like, the technology, like, the flying, all the vehicles and all that stuff looked great to me.
Yeah,
you
all
know,
that looked
when
fine.
He was when he like was chasing, was it when he was chasing Claw's car and he like wrecked the wheel and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Although that scene was well directed, I thought that that looked too CG as well.
Oh, that didn't bother me.
I was thinking like the stage, like the realism of Winter Soldier is like so above and beyond it that that I was a little surprised that it did not just feel a bit more real to me.
That never bothered none of the CG in the car chase bothered me. I was very into that. But that NCG when they're fighting on the train, it's a little, it looks video gamey.
It looks a little video gamey. And honestly, I was expecting sort of a more personal final battle between those two characters because it was kind of Shakespearean. And I mean, I definitely know they needed to do kind of fighting themselves.
It was a little bit more of a like big traditional end battle with their arch foe.
I mean, it wasn't them fighting a million robots like Marvel Cinematic likes to do.
Right.
But it definitely had a sort of that element of kind of expectedness.
But they did bring in the multiple like the robots in a way with like the tribes and all that kind of stuff. And I thought they pulled it off well.
They did.
Yeah, I think it is generally to me a testament to how good the movie is that, you know, something in some ways as big as like some, to me, is some weak CG in it is really a minor problem.
Yeah.
It's like the characters and stuff were so awesome in it that I kind of don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the characters are just well realized.
A lot of them, I think people were like, well, this is, you know, they got a good actor. Like, what's the name of the, I don't know the actor who, from Boseman? Get Out, actually.
Oh, Daniel Kaluuya?
Yeah, Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah, like I was like, oh, this is a minor role. It's interesting. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it. Oh, he ends up being very interesting. Oh, this guy playing M'Baku, the guy who was, what was he? Is he the white ape or whatever in the comics?
Man ape,
yeah.
Which, that, just as an aside, his lair and his place is
awesome,
freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Showing like the mountaintops in Wakanda and having him be like this
the
kind
giant
of
ape,
harsh living, like snowbound, like warriors or whatever, and they were cool for bad guys. Again, he like seemed like he was just there initially. I was like, oh, he's there to be the guy who's like an angry, like the Klingons of Wakanda, the hyper honorable, hyper masculine, like toxic masculine guys who are going to be just bad guys. And they ended up being having more to do with it. And there was even like some humor with a M'Baku later on a few of the funniest moments, arguably.
But I
loved him. I think the CG is like my only complaint. Like, I loved all the characters and stuff.
I can't wait to see these characters even more, and I know they're all going to be in Infinity War.
Right.
They've already announced that. I want to see Shuri talk with Tony Stark. I want to see
Somebody said they wanted Peter Parker to have an internship in Wakanda because Shuri and Peter Parker would be amazing together.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. I mean, just based on her interactions with Martin Freeman's character, and I'm super excited to see that. The post-credit sequence with the UN was cool. Very much an homage to the first Iron Man movie, which I loved.
I will also say, related to that, thematically, I liked what the movie had to say.
Yeah.
Oh, very much
And
I think we need that right now.
I agree. And I also liked that it was a complex journey for the hero and that the villain was so well-rounded that there was definitely that you can have arguments that, if not in his methodology, but in some of his principles, he was right.
Yeah.
It makes for a really interesting thing. And then there is the bigger picture of, like, that's outside of our sort of purview of, like, what it means to black audiences, which is clearly a lot.
Yeah.
It's something that we've glimpsed in our store when through characters like Miles Morales or Kamala Khan or whatever, is how much that the truth there is to the representation matters. Like, there were times when I was growing up, I kind of had some of that same knee-jerk reaction that dumb white people do sometimes.
Yep.
Which is like, well, you know, why is Miles Morales becoming Spider-Man? We've got Spider-Man, he's Peter Parker, create a new character, it's better for everyone, it's better to have an original black hero, and it doesn't, you know, then there's not two Spider-Men running around. And what we've discovered, what I think we've kind of learned in this job is, A, very hard to introduce any new characters ever.
Yeah.
Like, so good luck with that.
Yeah.
Right around somewhere in the mid-80s, people stopped wanting new characters.
Yeah.
Or the skill at bringing them out sort of seemed to drift away. I do think it's a worthy goal, but occasionally, like, doing some legacy stuff like that can be hugely meaningful. It is hugely meaningful for a young African American or Latino kid with Miles Morales to have a character who really represents them. And so, you know, when you see a movie like this that is like it's the consummation of that, and not just, I think I saw this play mentioned somewhere where a lot of times sort of black identity in movies is based around tragedy, you know? And, you know, there's like the suffering that they've had to endure. And here's a movie that's like, instead it celebrates black identity in a really amazing way that's got everybody fired up.
Yep.
And I say everybody, except for the racist assholes.
True, but
they're fired up.
In a different way, right?
But yes, there's a secondary. Of course, this movie has its own dimension in that, and I'm excited by how well it's doing.
Yeah.
By what it means to people, what it means for future movies, what it means for black directors. There's like a whole slew of side issues aside from the fact that it was a kick-ass movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like, I always worry, and I feel like Wonder Woman benefited from this a little bit, of sort of a grading on the curve. Like, right. We all liked Wonder Woman, but it's got issues, and I think a lot of it was because of what it meant for women and young girls.
Yeah.
That it sort of, we stand off the edges. I don't feel like that's going on with Black Panther. I saw this movie 3 times. Like, I fell in love with it as a Marvel movie. Right, it is just a great movie.
Now, I do still think Wonder Woman, like, served a very...
Oh, sure.
Was very important. I still like Wonder Woman. Highly legit. And also that secondary thing of the role it served to inspire women and girls who had not seen a hero on that level, on what I would call like the Superman level, to that degree. And then, like, there was like some amazing sequences in it.
Sure.
I do agree. It's not, I think, as strong an overall movie as Black Panther.
Yeah. No. But I think Marvel is getting ready for that with Captain Marvel and the Black Widow movies coming down.
Well, if the Black Widow movie happens.
At this point, I think it will.
We'll see. I don't know. At this point, I want to know what they're going to do with Black Panther 2 and 3, because we're never going to get a trilogy at this point, and I'm really curious to see where they go from here.
Yeah. There are any number of ways they could go with it. Like, I did not know that I was going to be so happy with the fact that they basically stayed in Wakanda, or, like, that is to say, they traveled around, but they never went to New York, the home of all things superhero in the Marvel Universe. Or really, like, did they go to the... They did go to the United States. We did see...
Flashback to Oakland.
Yeah, that's true. but it was not the Marvel Universe lensing of it, per se.
What time period? It was 1990?
92.
Yeah,
what's interesting is to, like, look at the where they built that. It's like, well, we know probably Captain Marvel will have operated at some point close to that.
Supposed to be in that era, yeah.
It's kind of interesting to have a timeline that is a character's age, they come and go timeline, and they have to stick with it because Rob Downey's agent and all that stuff. But, like, they're doing it so well, it does kind of make you wonder. It's like, well, could they do that in their comics?
Yeah.
They are definitely doing it about as well as you possibly could.
Did you guys like the final end credit sequence with Sebastian Stan?
Yes, I did.
And I know that's a reference to a Christopher Priest character as well.
The kids call him the White Wolf, which actually is a character who's referenced in the Black Panther annual this week.
Yeah, he is.
Did one of you guys mention the Black Panther annual?
Yes, okay. Dave did.
Just making sure. But yeah, I like that little nod. I like, after seeing Shuri, it makes sense that she'd be the one to sort of deprogram and fix Barnes. And I'm curious to see how that all ties in the Marvel Universe.
Because the White Wolf was basically like the...
He's the head of the secret police. The war dogs.
Yeah.
And actually, if Bucky becomes like the head of the war dogs, that's an interesting role for him.
Yeah.
But I think it was just a nod.
Right.
We'll see.
They may do their own take on that, which could end up being very different from the comic take.
Maybe he will no longer be known as the Winter Soldier in the cinematic universe. He'll be the White Wolf.
The White Wolf.
Which actually would be kind of awesome.
And then when Colossus shows up, he'd be like, "By the White Wolf." He'd be like, "What?"
No, I'm over here.
Thing. It's just a thing I say. It's not.
Oh, is that from Russian history? No, is something Claremont came up with.
Nobody knows. It's not Russian.
It's not Russian at all. I don't know.
Don't question. Russia wolf whites you.
All right, and with that, we'll close out for the week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
yo, Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.